Hi, and welcome to the College Financial Lady podcast. I'm Anne Garcia, the only financial advisor and author of the College Financial Lady blog. Today I'm talking with Jonathan Sparling. Jonathan is Director of Strategic Partnerships at the Private College 529. In his role, he's responsible for developing and enhancing partnerships that elevate the Private College 529 brand and support strategic growth initiatives. Jonathan started his career working in the financial aid office at Worcester Polytechnic Institute during his time at WPI and throughout his career. Did I get that one wrong?
No, you got it right. It's great. Good job.
Jonathan has counseled students and families on college savings, financing, and general financial education, while also supporting strategic partners in delivering financial education to their students and members. Prior to joining Private College 529, Jonathan served as Associate Director at the Massachusetts Educational Financing Authority, which is the Massachusetts 529, leading their college relations team during a time of growth and transition into a national lender. Jonathan, thank you so much for joining me today.
Absolutely, and thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Why don't we get started? Why don't you tell me a little bit about Private College 529, specifically, and prepaid tuition programs in general. I mean, I think most people who are listening to this are probably familiar with state-based 529 college savings plans. But how does the private college 529 work, and who's it's a fit for, and what's sort of its role in a family's college savings strategy?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and thank you again, and excited to be sharing this with all of your listeners. Private College 529 plan is a prepaid tuition plan. And what it allows families to do is to save on the cost of college by essentially purchasing tomorrow's tuition at today's prices. And so what makes our plan a little bit unique versus some of the other state-based plans is that unlike those plans, we are working primarily with or exclusively with private college and universities across the country. And so compared to other prepaid plans that are more state-based, we are working with colleges and universities, again, throughout the nation. And so when families open an account, call them account owners, they name a beneficiary, which would be their student, and then they, upon depositing money, are locking in a percentage of tuition and fees at all of the participating colleges and universities in the plan, about 300, and any that may join the plan in the future. And, you know, in general, the difference between prepaids versus savings plans is that, you know, on the prepaid side, as the name implies, you're locking in some or all of that cost of tuition and fees. Whereas in a traditional 529 savings plan, you are just, you know, opening that account and investing the money in the market in different funds of that nature. So, you know, kind of a, if you think about them balancing out each other, you know, the prepaid mm-hmm. offers you the opportunity, a little bit more security, a little bit more, you know, hedge against some risk. Whereas, you know, the savings plan, it's kind of invested in the market. And so, you know, we think that holding both are really a good, good strategy and makes a lot of sense in terms of kind of reducing overall risk, for families when it comes to planning for college.
Yeah, I would say particularly in the current, you know, low interest rate environment where you're, you know, if you're in an age-based account in a 529 savings plan and you're close to college, you're in a lot of fixed income that really isn't paying anything.
Right, right. Absolutely. Yeah. And what, you know, prepaid allows you to do is, you know, and specifically for our plan is you are, you know, upon opening the account, the money that you deposit, you are, again, no matter what plan or what any of the participating colleges that are part of the plan, you are locking in that that tuition and fees or percentage of tuition and fees at all of those colleges. And so it's really a great way to plan for any future increases in tuition costs, which we know is happening at many colleges. But it also kind of gives you that advantage of potentially realizing a better return than, you know, even some of your 529 funds for sure.
Yeah. So making sure that I understand this and we communicate this correctly.
Yeah,
let's say, for example, so my daughter attends University of Chicago, which is a private college 529 school. And so I have some of her 529 in the private college plan. And so her account is earning her account is basically growing at the rate that University of Chicago's tuition is growing.
Exactly.
Now,
exactly.
If I were a parent of, say, a 12-year-old who obviously has no idea where they're going to college.
Unless they're really out of the game. So that's good.
and they're investing. So let's say, you know, they put in $10,000 this year.
Yep.
Then they're somewhat, until they get to the actual college decision, getting the average returns across all of the member schools. But then once they choose a college, does that $10,000 investment go back to that specific college's tuition on that date?
Right, exactly. So, you know, and 10,000 is a good example. So let's say that a family opens an account and they deposit $10,000. Essentially what you are put in $10,000. Essentially what you are purchasing are tuition certificates. And so if you opened an account with $10,000, that may be worth, let's call it, 0.33 or, you know, a third of years of tuition at one school where current tuition is $30,000. Or it may be worth, a quarter, 0.25 years at another school where current tuition is 40,000, right? So that, you know, kind of how that all equals out. Each time the family contributes to the account, the plan calculates how much tuition you own at each of the participating schools. And then from the plan side, we report to the families, to our account owners, how much tuition you own at not all of the schools. We ask you to pick a designated samples of schools. So on your account, so we ask you to pick five schools, but you're not locked into those five, but just to kind of make it easier, that's kind of, we show you what, what your tuition dollars or what your lock-in rate would be buying you at the sample schools that you pick. So yeah. So for families that are, and it's really advantageous that, you know, we try to really get this information in front of folks that have younger children, because if you think about it, the earlier, much like, you know, saving for in a traditional plan or saving it for retirement, the earlier that you can open an account and lock in that rate, the more years that you have to see that money grow. And, you know, assuming that tuition is going up at the participating schools, which for many it is, you're, you know, purchasing tomorrow's tuition at a more discounted rate. So, that's why, you know, as I'm sure you do too, we try to encourage folks to save as early as often and as early as possible, because it really just is advantageous to them in the long run.
Yeah. So, you know, I was reading a book about investing and it said that the best investment book would be a one page book called Shut Up and Wait.
I like that. And it's
put your money in and shut up and wait.
right. And it's great. And so, you know, what's interesting is, yeah, this is really a, I like to say it is truly kind of a set and forget, right? Because I think, with traditional plans and obviously, you know, with 529s particularly, you can't change your asset allocation too often. I think it's twice a year, but truly with this one, you open the account and you're locking in. So you are setting it and it's kind of in there. And it's nice, I think, because it takes some of that, little bit of that anxiety out of it. You know that you are getting a good rate and locking it in. And really for the participating schools, you don't have to worry about how much tuition goes up. in subsequent years because the funds, the return is guaranteed by the schools.
Yeah. So how does the private college 529 work? I mean, who's, mm-hmm. when you deposit money, who's investing that money, and, you know, what's the role in that for a college?
Yeah, absolutely. So when a family opens an account, or all of our account owners, as I mentioned, they're purchasing those tuition certificates, and then the totality of all the contributions from all our account owners are actually put into a trust. And then that trust itself is invested in. So, you know, we work with financial folks to ensure that money is kind of invested safely and securely. And then for the colleges that are participating, you know, they are, like I said, almost 300 colleges. They're the ones who are guaranteeing to honor essentially that return on or that, you know, those locked in tuition fee rates. And so on the college side, you know, we have colleges that have been with us since our beginning. We started in 2003, and, you know, the whole premise behind why Private College 529 was started was because private colleges recognized that, costs were going to continue to probably go up in the future. And they wanted to provide a mechanism for families to help lock in, if not all, certainly a percentage of tuition and fees as part of their college savings portfolio. And so, you know, it is advantageous on the family side because you are ahead of the game and starting early. And then on the college side, you know, they are very much participating in the plan, using it as a potential recruitment tool. They are putting this out as, I would say, goodwill to potential future applicants and enrollees. We have a lot of schools that will position this through their alumni office as kind of an alumni resource and benefit. And so, you know, from the school side, they're viewing this as a way to help future families, whether that's, you know, a family that's with a 2-year-old or a 12-year-old or even one that's a 17-year-old, right? Kind of this is a long play for many colleges to help you know, with some of those costs that are going up.
Yeah, that's what I'm almost curious about that, because essentially you're transferring the risk from the investor to the college.
Exactly. Yep. And what's, you know, and certainly so with schools, you know, they know that and they understand that for certain. It is structured as such that, you know, if we're doing our job and we continue to see kind of folks contributing money and funds growing, then we are hopefully, again, you know, always guaranteeing it to the families, but the colleges themselves see it as the benefit in the long run. And I should say that, you know, we are, I'll just throw this in here now, but we are a not-for-profit organization. And so, you know, the kind of what covers our overhead for our organization is a very minimal amount from the trust. We're actually limited to how much we can take out. And the colleges, again, assuming all the risk. And our board of directors is made up of all folks from colleges. And so they are, you know, very much invested in the plan and very much invested in the success. And as I mentioned earlier, they were the ones who founded the plan in 2003.
Mm-hmm. So now what happens, you know, given that college mm-hmm. planning is one of the tougher things to do, because you're always planning for a moving target, right? When you implement a strategy, yep. You have no idea what, you know, what the target is. So what happens if you save in the private college 529 and then don't end up attending a private college?
Yeah, great question. And you know, one that we get a lot. So a few options if a family is saving in private college 529, but they don't end up attending one of the member schools. Additional colleges are always joining private college 529. Just last June, we had a Georgetown University, which was great. And so whether the college is there when you open the account or it joins after you open, same rules apply, that you are locking in and it's, you know, kind of backdated to when you open the account. So we're always adding new colleges. But if a family, if the child goes to a college or university that doesn't participate, the family does have, or doesn't go to college at all, the family does have a few options. The first is that they can change the beneficiary to another family member. The second option is that if they decide to go to a school kind of outside the plan, they can roll the account over to a state-sponsored 529 plan. So they can roll those funds over into kind of a traditional 529 savings plan. Or they could request a withdrawal. And as long as they use the funds on qualified education expenses, then they will not have to pay any additional taxes on that. So folks do have options if indeed it's those funds aren't, if the named beneficiary doesn't end up going to one of the schools in the plan.
And then, you know, as far as growth of those dollars, is there, you know, how does that happen for a, you know, given that it's tied to, you know, tied to specific colleges' tuitions?
Yeah. So if a family requests a withdrawal or they roll over into a state-sponsored 529 plan, the growth on the funds is actually will be calculated based on the total amount that was in the account every year, with a maximum gain of 2% and a maximum decrease of 2% every year. So at the end of the year, let's say a family, you know, whatever money they have invested in the plan, if depending on kind of the performance of the trust, they could realize a gain up to 2% on their investment. But if the trust didn't perform great and the market wasn't, you know, so great, then the most that their investment would go down would be 2%. So there's not as much potential increase on the upside, certainly. But again, you have that downside protection, right? The most you would ever lose would be 2%, even if the market had a, you know, kind of a very bad year, for lack of a better word. So if families decide to withdraw those funds, that percentage, that maximum 2% or minimum 2%, is calculated every year that the funds were in the plan. And so their withdrawal amount would be equal to whatever that calculation ends up being. So, you know, it's something that we certainly, you know, certainly we have families do, and certainly, you know, they can kind of go through and work with us to figure out, okay, what would this exactly look like? But as folks, as you can probably imagine, that the best use of the funds would be to use at one of the participating schools.
And just to be clear, since this is a prepaid tuition plan, when we're talking about using it at a participating school, we're talking about using it for tuition.
Tuition and fees and mandatory fees. Yes, correct. Yes. Yep. And so another difference between your traditional 529s that can be used on room and board expenses as well. But yes, because this is prepaid, it's locking in current tuition and mandatory fees. Yes.
Okay. Yep. And so then if you had, let's say you are attending a member school and you use some of it for room and board, then would that be subject to that same 2%, 2%, you know, 2% max, negative 2%?
Okay. Yep. If you decided to use some, and then if you decided to essentially apply some to tuition and fees, that kind of use, when folks use it at a school, we call it redeeming. Mm-hmm. So if you redeem it for whatever the, you know, the locked in rate is, yep, you could use it for that. And then if you had excess funds, you could then withdraw it, you'd get the plus or minus 2%, and you could use towards other expenses outside the tuition and fees. Okay. Yep.
So I know this year with the pandemic and whatnot, my daughter's college froze tuition, which meant that I got no return on my private college $529. I know that hers was not the only school that did that. I'm not sure how common that was. Is this something that has ever happened in the past, or, you know, something one should be concerned about overall?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, we are seeing some of that, you know,
or are we thinking next year they're going to raise it by double the amount?
Well, yeah. So it's interesting. Yeah, I know. Right. To kind of make, yeah. So it's interesting, right. You know, we have seen some of this, in the past, not a ton. And, you know, when it comes to kind of the freezing of tuition, you know, something we'll certainly, continue to keep an eye on right now. It is certainly the exception, not the rule for higher ed mostly, but, you know, really, and I think too, it's important to remember that, you know, you wouldn't realize a return only if there had been a zero increase in tuition since the family bought into the plan. And there's actually a 36 month waiting period for redemptions. So it's unlikely that the tuition has remained flat for a number of years. So even if tuition froze for this fall at last year's rate, if the family prepaid tuition 3, 5, or 10 years ago, it's still likely that the tuition is higher than the time of purchase. You just didn't get the return for this
year. Yeah, I was laughing when I saw that. I'm like, I'm probably the only person in the world who thinks there's some negative to tuition not going up this year.
But like you said, no, that's right. But like you said, you know, we, you know, certainly it's something we'll keep an eye on, right? And I think it's certainly something that, you know, we will continue to monitor. Like I said, our board is full of folks at institutions of higher education, kind of representing across the board. And so, you know, we'll continue to keep an eye on that. But yeah, we, at least for now, we're seeing that as the exception, not the rule. So, but yeah, again, you'd have just not this past year, but the other years where you would see, in most cases, some return for the locking in rate.
Yeah. So, one of the things that I think was really interesting when I learned about the private college 529 right around the time that my daughter accepted admission at UChicago. And that was, you know, April, May of several years ago. And so I invested in the account. And one of the things that was great about doing it right then was that the tuition rates reset every July 1st, right? So yes. Unlike a normal 529 where I'm getting an investment return based on the specific day that I started, in her case, since I was able to contribute before July 1st, I was getting the prior year's tuition rate as sort of my base case on her tuition. Are there other tips or tricks to using private college 529 that can help families stretch their education dollars? Or, you know, given your broad background in paying college, you know, any general tips and tricks that you could point us to that would, you know, like I said, help families to stretch those dollars?
Yeah, certainly. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, we always encourage families to save early and often, you know, but we do have, but many of our accounts are opened in May and June, as you did yourself. And so, as you mentioned, because the prepaid tuition quickly becomes more valuable on July 1st, it usually does go higher. And so you're kind of realizing that immediate return, if you will, on that. So, yeah, so that's definitely one tip that we would certainly advise folks to kind of get to open that account before the July 1st reset on tuition and fees. Another tip that can benefit is to deposit funds into for any account holders early in the academic year, say July or August. And because in our kind of concept of a tuition certificate, it begins with the first purchase in a plan year, which runs from July 1st to June 30th. And a certificate can be redeemed for tuition after 36 months. And so kind of the earlier that you can contribute, the earlier you could redeem that as well. So kind of earlier in the year. So kind of maybe doing that first deposit in May and June, because you're realizing or you're locking in before the tuition resets, but then certainly early on in the year, because now you're dealing with the redemption months as well, that timeline. So that's another tip for our particular plan. And then, you know, just overall, I would say that, and, you know, I think a lot of us talk about this in the industry, but, you know, it is really, it's true, right? The more you can save early and often, is always beneficial. You know, just having some realistic conversations about costs, right? I think is another good thing to do. Getting students involved, getting your sons and daughters involved in the conversation as much as you feel comfortable. You know, when I worked in a financial aid office, many of the times we would have conversations. So if I was having conversations with prospective students, it was with the parents. And the students might be in the room, but, you know, I was kind of talking to the parents. And I get it. I totally understand. You know, when it comes to finances, it's definitely an individual or family by family decision. But, you know, this is kind of a little bit off savings. But I think just being open and honest and mindful about the cost conversation is really just extremely important, and one that, you know, is best suited to have as the family, and best suited to have earlier rather than, you know, 2 days before you need to make a decision about school.
Once you get all those acceptances in, you're like, I think that's...
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I get, right? I mean, I've got two young kids, and so we're already planning now, and I know that, you know, its cost will probably be here. So I get it, and I understand, and it's a very emotional decision. But, you know, coming from that finance angle, you know, just the more you can talk about it, the better.
Yeah. Cause you certainly, I mean, I found with my own kids, just being open with them about what our overall objective with college was, you know, that it was to get an Absolutely. Education that would launch them into a good adulthood versus, you know, right. having a specific right. nameplate, on their, mm-hmm. You know, on their college diploma was a really, really helpful conversation to have. And then, you know, like you said, save early and save often. I think so many people have heard somewhere along the line the myth that the less they save, the more scholarships they're gonna get. And, you know, saving creates choices is how I look at it. And the more savings you have, the more choices you have. The less savings you have, mm-hmm. the less choices you have, and maybe you'll get lucky and get a big scholarship, but that's.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, I think to that sentiment as well, specifically when it comes to cost, I'd be remiss if I didn't say this, but, you know, also as you're going through that list and you're at that decision point, you know, really kind of toning in on sticker versus net price, right? And so, you know, we know that sticker price is the published price of a school, but net price is what you're actually going to pay after any grants and scholarships. And so, you know, not even getting into savings yet, but, you know, a lot of privates have higher sticker prices than publics. But if you look at what the net price is after you factor in tuition and fees, again, not necessarily a saving strategy, but more of like a financial consideration, right? Making sure that you're considering net price versus sticker, not necessarily getting scared away by what the sticker price says.
Well, I know so my daughter looked at a lot of private schools. I have twins. My son had very specific interests that were not private schools.
That's fine. That's good. Yeah.
But, It was fascinating when we, you know, we did a college tour the summer before her senior year, and we looked at, I want to say like 18 different schools over 2 weeks. We came home and did all the net price calculators on those schools, and her net prices ranged from $14,000 to $82,000. based on the same set of data. And I think people get so focused on doing the FAFSA and what's my EFC, and forgetting that EFC isn't as important as what schools do with your EFC and how they
100%.
and you and I can't influence that, but hopefully we can influence people to know that savings will give you more choices.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and you're absolutely right. And that personal story is so true, right? It's really kind of up to the school, their enrollment goals and things of that nature. And we can't influence that, but we can influence saving. So yeah, the more you can save early and often, certainly, the better for everyone.
Yeah. Well, Jonathan, I so appreciate you spending time with me today. Do you have any final words of wisdom, anything we didn't cover that you wish people knew?
No, I guess I'll just say thanks for the time. If folks want to learn more about the Private College 529 plan, certainly feel free to visit our website and learn more. And overall, read as much as you can about the planning process. Take advantage of all the virtual opportunities that schools are putting on now. In speaking with the colleges, I think that they are busier this year than they ever have been, right? And so take advantage of that to really learn about the schools. And for some of your listeners with younger children, just start saving and make it and automate it. I'll say that.
Yep, and you mentioned your website. What's your URL? And I will put it in the show info as well. But
Absolutely. So we are privatecollege529.com.
excellent. Well, Jonathan, thank you so much.
Absolutely, Anne. Thank you for the time.